Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
Here we go with another episode of Zero Block 30, and it's brought to you by our friends at 4Hems. You guys might have noticed, Brandon Cons, whenever you saw my handsome face, that I cut back the hair, and I'm not even wearing a hat right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, you look very handsome.
I usually rock a hat.
The polo's a nice touch, too.
Thank you. And I have
all the people listening, he's wearing a blue striped polo that is very handsome.
I am, but the polo people didn't pay for an ad. The 4Hems people did, and they did a great job with my hair, man. My hair looks so much better since I've been using it. I really actually like it. My hair feels fuller. And I think a lot of it's just confidence. Like it's, I have been noticing that my widow's peak was becoming like a widow's mountain. Like it looked like Mufasa was about to fall down my widow's peak. It was getting so bad. But it's helping. But I will say, 4Hems makes me a little more horny, fellas, because they have some sexual performance stuff too. And 25% of all ED cases start at 40. Now, I don't want you to go out there and think that I have some ED going on. I get boners fine. Don't worry about my boners, folks. I don't want you to worry about my boner at all. It's not
tick dick, not limp dick.
Yeah, it's temp dick, not limp dick. Exactly right. Good job, Bren. That's prime time producing right there. But 4Hems.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual awareness. My moisture of my skin is looking better. Like, I'm looking better all around. I feel handsome. Minus my belly. It's not doing a whole lot for my belly. I need something for my belly, too. If you want to try 4Hems, just do it for $5 a month, and we'll get you started for $5 while supplies last. See the website for full details. It's 4Hems.com/zero. That's FORHIMS.com/zero. 4Hems.com/zero, $5 a month. Let's go. Let's start it off. You know, it's actually like 75 degrees and incredibly sunny here right now. There's not many days that I'm taken aback when I go outside and I'm like, fuck, it's a beautiful day. Today in Texas is one of those beautiful days. I just had a drive through the hill country. It was fucking unbelievable. That's how we're going to start the show. But before we do that, let's hit it with a little yacht music, Bren. Hit them with the yacht music. No bodies today. Yacht music. Hit them, birdie. I'm riding back high. I was like in the lows of some depression. I'm feeling high today, and I think a lot of it's because of the weather. How are you guys doing? Because I have big, big news that I want to share as soon as you do your check-in.
Okay, I am excellent, per usual. The weather is not promising up here in the Northeast, I'm told, this week. It was right in that sweet spot where we were starting to get a few mild days, and right on cue comes the real shitty weather to bring us back down to earth.
Yeah, just like rainy. I mean, it's temperature-wise, like I can tolerate this, but you know, it's nothing like 75 and sunny where you are.
But well, what is it that you have to tell us? I need to hear this now. I'm excited.
All right, so once a year, I started it last year, but it's now, because I've done it twice, it's an annual tradition. We've gone into an annual tradition. I have since January 9th is when I started it. I have an alert on my phone to call every other day to this meat market that's in a little town called Helotes. It's outside of San Antonio. Every single day, every other day, I call them at 10 o'clock in the morning. Hey, do you guys have any unclaimed venison orders? Do you have any unclaimed venison orders? Because in Texas, you can't sell deer meat. You can't sell it. But
why?
It's just against, because they don't have USDA approval. Like, you can't monitor it because everything's like free range, and you're shooting it.
Sure.
And it's just not like the most sanitary. So you can't sell it like in a store. But meat markets that do like butchering, they can sell stuff that they already process for somebody else that they don't pick up. So if somebody goes in there and they tell them, I want 30 pounds of salami and 30 pounds of hamburger meat, and then they see the bill that it comes out to like $300, they're like, fuck, I don't have $300 to pay for that all up front. That happens all the time at this one place. But there's only like a 2-week window, a 2-day window that they really sell it. This morning was that day. So I went and just picked up 210 pounds of venison that was like summer sausage, that's chorizo, it's hamburger meat, it's chili hamburgers, the back straps, the ham steaks, all that stuff. I've got like 200 pounds of meat sitting on my counter, frozen as fuck right now, with beef jerky and all kinds of stuff. And guess how much I paid for it?
$0.
No.
No, you probably paid...
It's 210 pounds of meat. Remember that.
Yeah. Jesus, that should be close to $1,000, but I don't think you paid
$202,
that.
Dude.
That's a steal. That's even more than a steal.
I did that last year. I did it last year, and I only have 3 pounds of
hamburger
meat.
I do remember that last year.
I have like 3 pounds of hamburger meat left, and I just got the mother load. And they didn't have the summer sausage. Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm going to make like charcuterie or however the fuck you say it, plates.
Charcuterie.
That's a weird word. I say
it's a great word, though.
It is.
It is a great word, and it's a word to let people know you are classy AF.
Yeah, and you have it. We have it like almost every Friday night is what me and my wife do. So we have.
That's a fantastic Friday night.
So we have a family night on every Friday night where the kids mm-hmm. come out and we could put the kids on the floor with like TV dinner trays. They eat pizza or grilled cheese or whatever. My wife and I go get fancy cheese, fancy meats, and we just sit back and watch the movie with the kids. The kids aren't allowed to turn around at the carpet in front of the TV. They're not allowed to look in our direction. It's like me and my wife have a date night, but that's how we do it. So I'm stoked,
that's like,
man.
They're standing in formation. They're just standing in formation. They better keep those eyes front.
They get to pick whatever movie they want to watch. And I say, you can watch this movie, you cannot watch this movie, but the only thing you can and cannot do is talk to me and your mom. That's it.
Where did you come up with this insatiable taste for venison? Believe me, I get it, buddy. Venison is delicious, and I don't have it nearly enough. I should probably talk to my pals who are hunters who have it all the time. I don't have it enough, and I don't know of any butchers around these parts that would have it. But where did this come from for you?
Well, it's not even about that. One, it's about saving money. I mean, if
yeah,
normally, because if you get like hormone-free meat down here, it's like $10 a pound. So mm-hmm. if I do 20 meals or if 10 meals in a normal month, I'm going to go through my entire meat budget for the year in 2 months rather than have as much as I want for cheap. I mean, that's a big mm-hmm. reason why. And a lot of the stuff that we make, like spaghetti, chili, there's a different taste that comes with game meat that enhances the flavor, because a lot of the beef that's out there is kind of flavorless. So mm-hmm. this venison, the way that they do the hamburger meat is they add in some beef fat to it. So it's not like just completely Ooh. Venison. So like the pan sausage, and this place, they cook everything amazing. Like the process that they do it, it just tastes so damn good. I'm so stoked. That's enough meat talk. Excited to be on Kate's Corner because she wrote a blog this week that I thought was really funny. And there's not very often that I read something and I laugh out loud. I'm a very stoic reader because you guys know I struggle through with reading. You've heard my ad reads for like a year and a half now. You know I struggle through it. But I read her blog about pubic hair in the shower and wanted to have her – I wanted to talk to her about it a little bit more, because whenever you're first starting out boot camp, you do get in trouble. And so I kind of want to explain some of the terms. Like you have the drill instructors will come out and you're going to be with – on a working detail. Working detail is basically you get assigned a stupid ass task, and wherever you're at in boot camp, you could be like a shower recruit, which means you clean the shower, you can clean the latrine, the head, you can clean anywhere that they tell you to clean. Kate got stuck in the bathroom. How did you get stuck there, Kate?
So I made the mistake of doing relatively well in boot camp, which meant they gave me a battle buddy who wasn't doing well. So she was just always screwing up. She'd be the one on the line who, you know, the drill instructor was coming down the line to check everyone, and she would have a giant snot bubble pop out of her nose or something. Like, there was always just something wacky and weird that she was doing. She could never get anything right. And so one of the last weeks of boot camp is family day, where your family comes down. You finally get this free pass to leave. And a lot of girls have their boyfriends and girlfriends and whoever coming down. So we had had our razor privileges taken away for the full entirety of boot camp. We had a few too many suicide watches in the beginning
right.
of boot camp, which is when I think some people panic when they get to boot camp. They say that they're feeling a certain way, and then they have to sleep in the middle of the squad bay with people watching them 24/7. So,
and were they still doing the thing with like the purple flashlight, the purple moonbeams, where they like, and you literally have people marching around you, pointing a flashlight at you when you're trying to sleep, when you're already saying that you're suicidal. So we weren't exactly evolved on mental health from the get go.
No, it was like, let's take this to the extreme. Let's see. But, so we got our razor privileges taken away. So by the time family day rolled around, my bunkmate had done something wacky and we were in the washing room, like where the clothes and stuff, that was like normally our detail. We got switched over as punishment to the shower, to be shower recruits that night. And so all these women, like 80 women, had just gotten their razors back after 3 months.
And 80 sweaty ass women too. It's not even like just women who you're going to see at like the cafeteria. It's women who have been working their like vaginas off all day.
Yeah. And this was late May in South Carolina. So it was a little toasty out, but yeah. So everybody gets their razors back, and the showers in boot camp are, it's one room with like three poles with a bunch of like, just water shoots coming out of the holes. Yeah,
it's
and
like,
everybody
it's like
goes
going
in.
Through a car wash.
Yep, and everybody goes in all at once, and the drill instructor's yelling at you to hurry up. But by the end, they let you kind of take your time a little bit more in there, especially the night before family day. So everybody had their razors, and everybody was shaving their pubes in there, and their armpits and their legs. And it was just when everybody got out of there, and my bunkmate and I, I'm trying to be careful not to say her name, had to walk in. It was like, I wrote in the article, but like stepping inside a stuffed animal filled with Brillo pads. It was just like, and you know, pubes stick to everything. It's like Velcro. There was just like tumbleweeds of pubes rolling across the Wild West.
And
the bathroom floor.
Wet pubes are like the worst. Like my wife constantly asks me now, she's like, why don't you trim your beard more often? I'm like, well, mainly because it gets in the sink and I hate to touch my own like pubic feeling hair when it's wet. It's just gross. Touching, how many people, how many other recruits are there? 40, 50?
I don't, probably about 50, yeah.
So 50 other people's armpit mixed into a conglomerate, like a cacophony of pubic hair is just so gross.
Yeah, it was like, and we had people from all back, it was like a United Nations of pubes had assembled on the bathroom floor, and it was just, and, you know, I said it in the article, too, like, yeah, I got punished other times throughout my Marine Corps career. I did silly things and blah, blah, blah. But this, for some reason, just still, I still think about, like, I can still see it perfectly in detail in my head. Like, it just, no matter what we did, the pubes just kept multiplying. We could not get rid of them. It was awful. And which makes you think, I have a hypothetical for you, chaps.
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. Would you rather have to eat a spoonful, a heaping spoonful of pubes, freshly shaved off of a burly hiker who just came off the Appalachian Trail in the summertime, or be dropped in the middle of an Olympic-sized swimming pool full of pubes, but you have goggles and a little like mouth protector on, but you're just in shorts and a t-shirt, and you have to find your way out?
Oh, Olympics, no doubt. No, I mean, I wouldn't hesitate. It would just be like, I'd be there. Cause you, I mean, it can't be that thick so you feel like you'd be able to run. You would have to have your senses, though, because if you get – now, if you added in a caveat where you take the little yellow plastic bat and do, like, the dizzy game where you have to get really dizzy, so I don't know which way the shallow is or the deep end.
Yeah.
Because if you get down to the deep end, then you're going to be kind of winded because you've already waded through all the pubes, and you got to jump up to the 12 feet and then scale the wall to get out because you don't know which side. Or you could just take your chances that you're going to go to the shallow end and then get out when it's like 3.5 feet deep. If you go out the shallow end side, you're good. But having to jump and use some energy, you probably get those pubes in your mouth either way.
Yeah. If you're in the deep end, I'm assuming you're going to have to really scramble up those pubes to get the leverage
but,
you need.
I mean, the good thing about pubes is because they're so coarse in nature that you would probably have pretty good grip. Like you would probably be able to use it as grip. It wouldn't be like slippery or anything like that.
But I just picture the feeling of that on your skin. I don't know. I think I'd eat that tablespoon of pubes, man. I think
is it like, is it just straight up pubes and dry? Or did you say that there was like a liquid in it, like pubes with like mustard or pubes and peanut butter?
He just came off the trail, so there's probably his own natural peanut butter. Like, oh, maybe.
Where are we taking the pubes from? From like the gooch?
Yeah, like he just came off the trail, pulled his, and like, yeah, the gooch. Ugh. So freshly shaved.
Yeah, because at that point, you're also talking about poop, because there's no doubt about it that he's coming off the mountain. Yeah. He did some farting there, too, and it was probably wet. Yeah. His butthole was all greased up from his own, like, sweat.
If I could mix it with food, I would do that instead of the pool.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing either way. But...
All right, well, that's Kate's corner for today.
Thanks for joining, everyone.
What's the largest amount of pubes that'll make you change your mind? Or smallest, rather. Smallest. Like, one tablespoon's nothing. You're going to get that in your mouth when you're swimming.
Nothing.
Tablespoon's nothing. I mean, maybe like a
ladle full, maybe?
Not even a ladle. Like, even a ladle. Like a gallon of ice cream, like a gallon of pubes. That's like, that's a sick amount. That's a sickening amount.
Yeah, all right, here, all right. That's a lot. Let me. If we're talking that amount, then I'm going to swim, because back in my younger years, I was a competitive swimmer. So I know what it is to swim the length of an Olympic-sized pool.
That's water, though. It's kind
right.
See, this is where I think you're on the right track here to make this a fair thing, because if you're just wading through a pool full of pubes, that's not really that bad, because you can keep your mouth shut. I think what you have to do is make the ratio 25% water, 75% pubes.
Yes.
Then it's going to be like soupy and stuck to you.
Which I'm okay with. I'm okay with that. No. That's fine. Because if you're swimming properly, you're only going to breathe when you lift your head out of the water. And so long as – and yeah, you're going to catch a few strays. But
see, you're talking about Olympics. This is going to be like wading through a swamp of pubes. You're not doing the breaststroke. Like, you're not going to
– so I don't have to actually swim?
No, you just have to get through it. I mean, it would take like two – because it's going to be too swampy for you to – actually swim in at that point. It's basically going to be like going through the bogs in South Carolina.
Then I'm going through the pool of pubes, because I think I could do it and not get any in my mouth, and I really don't care. I think I could live more with pubes touching me than ingesting pubes.
Yeah, there's nothing like more sensitive to gross you out than something inside your mouth. Because that's something you can't get over. Like, you can get over something kind of like on your back and touching it, even if it's on your hands. Inside your mouth, I mean, you might throw it. Like, some people might not even survive that.
It's a weird feeling when you catch a stray hair in your mouth. So just think about that. And now think about knowing that it's someone else's pubic hair. I think that would put me over the edge.
And you guys know me. I'm not the most homophobic fellow in the world. Like, no. I'm pretty open. Like, I'm pretty open with hugging and touching and being with my friends. I still think I've always listed that I have one major fear in my life, and that's snakes. I'm terrified of snakes. I can move past that fear and kill a snake if I need to, but I don't like touching snakes. Another thing that I don't like is a man's beard on my neck. I feel like that is just revolting. The feeling of it is just gross, man. My best friend Josh, from when I was growing up, he used to sneak up behind me when I was watching TV and put his beard like on my neckline, and it made me feel like I was going to puke. So when my wife is like, you need to trim back your mustache hair, I immediately know why. Because it's the same exact feeling as pubes. I mean, that's why I don't like my face getting wet in the swimming pool with a beard on. It feels disgusting.
Yeah. And I get that, too. I was actually instructed that if I grew my beard out this winter, that I would have a very lonely winter. So that's why I didn't grow it out.
You look better with a beard.
Wow. Well, now I feel like pretty ugly and terrible about myself.
You should. You look way better with a beard. Like, when we did flashback pictures of us at the Devils game, right. That was Pete Connor attractiveness.
I'll say this. I took great pictures at that game.
That was peak attractiveness, Connor, right there.
All right. Well, then I might have to bring this back up for discussion if you're telling me I look good with the beard.
Just be like stubble. Just be like 5 days no shave and then keep it at that length.
All right, I could probably get away with that.
And then you could just keep it lined up with a Dollar Shave Club deal when we have that back again.
Boom. That's actually what I'm probably going
to
end up doing.
Can we go back to the ad read at the beginning of the show? I meant polo like as in a general term, like Band-Aid. Like, you're wearing a collared shirt, but I just refer to that as a polo. Is that wrong?
No, I think that's the style of shirt that it is.
Right, I would agree.
And this isn't a Ralph Lauren brand. Shirt.
Right, that's what I mean. It's just like you have a collar shirt.
That's actually some long-time stoolies, some Ridgeback. It's a Ridgeback shirt.
Hmm, very nice.
And they make comfortable stuff. No free ads, but they make comfortable stuff. And they sent my dog some high-performance bandanas. and they got nice. Muddy in like an hour. So
we have another clothing brand whose name I won't mention that is possibly interested with advertising with us in the future. So we might have some other nice polos coming our way.
Well, there you go. I'm sure everybody's on their seats about that one.
Probably.
Another thing that we have on today's show is an interview with another foreign military member. This time he's coming from us from jolly old England, and I'm stoked about it. He said that he listens to Zero Block 30. I'm always blown away when we find out things like that. Like, I've had some people from the Australian Marines tell me that they listen to the show. We had IDF member. Let's just take it around the globe. Let's make this podcast basically like the Epcot of podcast. Here we go.
I'd be all about that.
Yeah, let's take it to fucking England. British guy that's coming on. I was super stoked. We had an IDF fella a couple weeks ago. And I would like to get people from around the world. Sam reached out. He's a stool who lives in England. And he wanted to come on and tell some of the stories that he has from his time in the British Army. Thanks for coming on, Sam. Appreciate it, man.
No worries. Happy to be here.
You're probably going to have all kinds of English or American bitches that like your accent that want to fuck you and stuff now that you're on the show. Do British girls think that about American accents, or do they think that we sound like hillbillies?
It's probably half and half.
Half and half. I think like 100% of American women love the British accent, and I can't blame them. It's fucking charming. Just sitting here with you right now, I'm getting a little wet just thinking about it. We wanted to talk to you about life in the British Army and see how closely it related to us. So why don't you give us a little bit of background of where you're at in life before you joined the British Army and how that came about?
So I'm originally from a sort of military family. My dad was in. He served about 44 years in total. So he's hardcore military. I joined. It was always in my head to join.
Did you say 44 years?
Yeah. So he did his full 22 years service, which is what he signed up to do. And then he did kind of like another 22 as a what we call a full-time reserve service.
Jesus. So it's like a
full-time reservist, yeah. So he's pretty indoctrinated.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. So that's how you grew. So I imagine he was pretty strict then, growing up.
Yeah, pretty strict. Not too bad though. It wasn't too bad.
So you signed up at the ripe young age of 16. What was that like being that young of a buck in the army?
It was cool. It was like the army, something I always wanted to do. I think so. Joining at 16. I had my place, you know, I had a plan to go to university and everything like that. And I just thought, you know what, I can't really be fucking dealing with another 6 years of education or whatnot. I thought I'd jump straight in. But I did a year basic training with everyone else who was sort of 16. So by the time I got to my unit, I was, you know, about 17 and a half or so. So it wasn't too bad when I finally got there.
So what does basic training look like for you guys?
It's a little bit different being 16 because, like I say, you sort of do the whole, you do like a full year of it. Whereas if you're going in as an adult, you only do 3-4 months. But it's all the basic, you know, same stuff as, I guess, you guys, basic weapon handling, drill. We did
uniform, cleaning your uniform
and
shit.
Yeah, that's it. Learning how to iron, more drill. Field craft, things like that. So all the basic stuff, just extended out with a bit of classroom work as well as being 16.
One story that you told me before reminded me so much of the shit that you do. And that's what I find fascinating. Like, no matter what armed service you're in the world, you do the same kind of shit. You guys had a pre-deployment package going on and your sergeant needed to discipline somebody. Tell us a story about that.
Yeah, so we were pre-deployment training leading up to Afghan in, it must have been 2011, because we deployed in 2012, so it was around 2011 sometime. We were on a range package. One of my mates had a negligent discharge. Is that what you call them as well?
Yep.
Yeah.
Little ND.
ND on the range. And my troop sergeant, who, you know, he was my troop corporal, my crew commander when I first got there, so I knew him quite well. And he was our troop sergeant here, and he couldn't be asked to do any of the paperwork and charging the guy. So he made him scoot along the full 400 meter range on his ass like a dog, like a dog with worms, scoot the whole length of the range.
Like, was he actually rubbing it like into the rocks and shit?
Yeah, he was. He wasn't just doing it down the range. There was like a drainage stream running the whole length of the range, and he made him do it in that. And this was in Wales somewhere as well in the winter, so it wasn't warm at all. pissing down with rain, and he's scooting along like a dog for 400.
They've taken so much of that kind of shit out of, like, American military, where I feel like it's bullshit. Like, I think that's a great way to train somebody, because I'm sure you guys are the same way, that your troop sergeant, your troop leader could have taken him back and give him some negative paperwork and done all kinds of dumb shit, but just get it out of the way, make him drag his ass through the water in the cold for a little while, and then it's gone. It's done.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. He probably wouldn't get away with it now as well. This was a good few years ago. But yeah, you end up charging a guy, he loses a weekend, loses money, he's even more pissed off. So I think it's a better way of doing things.
And we used to give options. I don't know if you guys do the same way. Like, look, you can either have the negative paperwork, or you can owe me 15,000 push-ups over the next week.
Yeah, stupid shit.
Yeah, and every time you're gonna like, fuck it, just give me the push-ups. I'll just do the push-ups.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, but it was a sight seeing him go along like a dog with worms.
And another one of your buddies, you did a deployment. How many deployments did you do? One or two?
No, just the one. Afghanistan 2012.
Just the one. And we'll get into your deployment in a little bit, because that's a really interesting story as well. But shitting yourself is also a common thing amongst people in the military. Even when you're on patrol, you had a buddy that let loose into his trousers.
Yeah, for the record, not me. no, yeah, so we were just we were down in Helmand province, and we're just on a patrol. And another friend of mine, he's sort of shouting out to our sort of multiple commander, and he's like, Mossy, we got to stop. I've got to shit. I'm going to shit. I need to shit. And he's like, we're not fucking stopping until we get to the police checkpoint, you know, regardless. He's like, Mossy, I'm shitting. Like, we've got to stop or I'm shitting. And he's like, and a big argument. And so he's like, fucking, you know, shut up, Jim. We're getting to the checkpoint. And he's like, too late. It's done.
And oh, my God.
You can imagine if you're in a position where you're going to shit yourself, it's probably not going to be the nicest of shits.
And so, I'm sure that he was going through, like, minutes before he was going to shit himself, like, sitting there miserable. Because I've been on, like, I mean, everybody's been on road trips where you, like, have to shit, especially if it's cold, like, in the wintertime, and somebody else wants to turn the heat up, and you know that you're going to start getting all hot and emotional. Like, on a patrol, I can't imagine, because you're feeling like you're already wearing your, like, flak and Kevlar and helmet, and you got all your gear, and you just got to shit, and you're on a patrol, and you know you're in a terrible spot where you might get shot if you're trying to take a shit. Oh, my God, the worst. But yeah, it wasn't just, like, shit himself, and then everything was gone. What did you guys have to do after he shit himself?
So we ended up having to stop, you know, sort things out. And I think in the end, the QRF had to be called
out. I love that British terminology. He shit himself, so you just need to sort things out.
But yeah, we weren't too far from our patrol base anyway. So QRF got called to come out in the vehicles, pick him up. And I think probably the funniest thing was seeing him sitting in the back of the vehicle, driving all the way back past us. Like, you know, you can imagine what his face looked like.
So embarrassed. Just the worst. And the QRF dudes, I can't imagine them having to get geared up and do all their inspections and shit before they go out to get him, and thinking, we're going to get this dude who shit himself. Because QRF, usually if you're going out, it's for something pretty intense, not for one of your buddies shitting their pants.
They weren't happy with the smell of their vehicles either.
Oh, no, I imagine. We had the same. I was a dog handler, and we used to do clearance of houses, and we would go through. Well, a lot of the Iraqis were terrified of the dogs, and I would just send my dog in to smell, like, the area to see if there was any bombs. Well, one dude came out after my dog was there, because my dog was barking at him, and he had, like, his full-out, like, Iraqi dude, summertime, white dress-looking thing on, robes, and he had shit all down the back of his pants, too, because he was so scared of my dog that he literally shit himself. The worst part of the entire thing was looking at our corpsman, who knew that he had to clean the guy up before we could take him into custody. He's like, fuck, man. So he's like wiping this Iraqi dude down with, like, baby wipes and shit. Would be the worst. When you were in Afghanistan, you also had, you told me that you were injured. Do you mind walking us through the story of what happened there?
Yeah, no. So it was towards the, I think, we only had about 4 weeks left of deployment as well. We were on a big opt to sort of push north of a village where insurgents were sort of coming down from the north, setting up sort of strongholds. So we were we'd been on the ground about 2 weeks, putting in some new police checkpoints to sort of provide a bit of security coming in from the top. And we were, I think we'd literally just been sort of taken over, relieved. So we were on a patrol back to the main road, back to our patrol base. And we were sort of going down a track. Farmer comes out. He's sort of telling us, you know, they're in the area last night planting IEDs, things like that. So, you know, don't go down this route. Infinite wisdom of troop leader, young officer. He sort of, you know, he pushes us down the route. We can see ground sign in the middle of a track. So I'm like, and I'm point man of the multiple as well at this point. And I'm like, boss, we're not going down this way. You know, you want to fucking go down there, you can go down first. Yeah. I'm not. So, you know, there's a couple of irrigation ditches to our right, and we decide to sort of cross there and then sort of head across another field. They're pretty deep. So we're crossing them on ladders. You sort of using the ladders as a bridge. Cross the first one. There's a little bit of ground in between the first one and the next one. And me and my mate are in the middle. I literally sort of take a step down, you know, down the slope towards the second sort of irrigation ditch, put the ladder down. When with my left foot, I sort of just, well, stepped on an IED. Sort of blew me over.
Do you remember seeing it? Do you, like, in your memory, do you, like, go back through and be like, fuck, I should have recognized that? Or was it so well hidden that there's really nothing you could do? Because I know for me, like, after I got shot, I was thinking there's so many different things that I could have done that probably would have changed, but that's the way I reacted in that moment.
Yeah, so looking down on the ground, you know, it looked fine. Didn't look like anything. Looking back at the point I chose to cross, you know, I probably wouldn't have sort of chosen to cross there, but we were pretty limited as to where we could cross. But yeah, when the sort of engineers came in after, they said they found a couple more IEDs sort of a couple of meters to the left, a couple of meters to the right. So it probably wasn't the greatest place to cross, but at the time it looked okay, it looked good. So, you know, it's one of those things.
And I think that's, like, we call it Monday morning quarterbacking here, like, where you kind of look at everything that you're doing and you're like, fuck, man, like, all these decisions are instantaneous. It's not like you're looking at the crossway like, well, all right, let's go back to base so we can figure out what we're going to cross. You, as the point man, and that was my job as well, we've got to decide in an instant, because one of the most dangerous places that you could be is out in the open and not actually moving to an objective. Just standing statically is incredibly dangerous. So, yeah. But you always do end up playing those things over and over again. And I find that's a common thing amongst people who were injured in Iraq or Afghanistan, is that you replace it, like you replay that same idea over and over again. Do you do that, like, in your head now?
Yeah, I guess so. I sort of, you know, it's one of those things. I've always sort of tried to look at it as fucking shit happens. It's an occupational hazard. Looking at where we were, I couldn't have, you know, I wouldn't have thought that it was in a sort of position where it could happen. But, you know, it's a tough one. I try not to sort of dwell on, you know, the decisions I made. Fortunately, I was the only one injured. So I don't really, if my friend was injured as well or anything like that, or a big contact happened after, I probably would replay things in my mind a bit more. But as it was just me, I think, well, you know, it was sort of bad luck, I guess.
So kind of explain to us what the injury looked like, because I stopped you after you stepped on it. So what happened there? When you looked down, what did you think?
My thoughts were, if I've stepped on something, I'm going to sort of look down and see, you know, missing legs, torn up legs, things like that. I looked down, I had both my boots still. I had one trouser leg a bit torn up, but couldn't really see any blood or anything like that. So I initially didn't think it was me. I thought it was my friend behind me. So I tried to sort of get up, stand up, put some pressure through my feet. That's when I first realized, that's when the pain first hit me. And I realized it was me who had sort of stood on it. Banged a tourniquet on. Straight away, the medic was up there. He'd sort of just ran across the irrigation ditch. I don't know how he got across, because it was pretty sort of, you know, narrow. I don't know whether he jumped or not, but
isn't
he was
that
straight
amazing
up there.
How medics have like that third world sense of like what to do like in that moment? That like across services, across countries, medics are fucking badass.
Yeah, and I think it was his like fourth deployment to Afghanistan, so he knew his shit, and he was there, you know, in a flash. He was up there, gave me morphine. My guys sort of somehow got me back across the irrigation ditch pretty well. And that's where they took my boots off. I was wearing some like nice fresh white socks, which I just put on from the American PX. Nice comfy white socks. they cut my boot off, and that's where the sock was like blood red. My ankle was sort of sticking out. They cut the sock off. My heel sort of kind of fell off almost. But they sort of patched me up, you know, bandaged me back together a little bit, and then got sort of helloed out of there, Kazovac'd out of there. It was, as far as, you know, IED strikes go, things like that, it was pretty straightforward. There's no follow-up contact. So I guess I got quite lucky, especially considering I stood on it as well.
Because you had the morphine, is your memory kind of intact? Like where you got onto the helicopter, do you remember what was going through your mind when you're on the helicopter?
Yeah, so I remember sort of it all. I was conscious for it all. I remember it all. I remember talking shit, waiting for the helicopter to come down. Me and my mates were sort of, I think we must have watched the film Dodgeball like 50 times out in Afghan. Yeah. And I remember talking to him, and it was like, if any one of us gets hit, we've all got to remember to say that, you know, that nobody makes me bleed my own bloodline.
Yeah.
And I was at, I was, you know, off my head on morphine there, and I'm like, I suddenly remember I got to say it. Everyone starts laughing, and I start speaking some pure shit, which the guys were just sort of laughing their heads off. But I remember getting on the helicopter, take off, all nice. They're all sort of looking down at my feet, and I'm asking them when they're going to sort of knock me out with gas. I'm like, so when are you going to, you know, knock me out with gas? You know, and they're like, nah, you're not too bad. I'm like, fucking yeah, nice one.
Yeah, yeah. And I think because a lot of those the flight guys, they have seen so much shit like in their course of their duty, like every single day they're getting people. In your own mind, you're like, no, this is pretty fucking bad. Like I remember looking through a hole in my arm and being like, no, this is pretty bad. Like,
yeah,
I can see through my arm. This is not good. And I'm sure you felt the same exact way when they're just kind of like, oh, it's not that bad. You're going to be okay. Yeah. And you don't know how much they're like bullshitting you. Like, are they just saying that because that's the company line that you're going to be okay? Or is like this actually what's going on?
Yeah. I kind of, considering I sort of looked down still at my legs when I first got hit, I thought, okay, I'm not in the worst position here. But yeah, you know, I expected I'd get on the helicopter, they'd knock me out. I'd wake back up in Camp Bastion, in the hospital, all operated on, you know, good to go home. But yeah, they just kept me, conscious the whole way, all the way back to the hospital.
And so then the last thing that you remember before you go under gas is laying on the table and like, you're going to get operated. Then you wake up, right?
Yeah. So they operated me. They put a load of pins in and wires to sort of stick it all back together. Another thing I just remembered, what was funny is, when I got off the helicopter and put in an ambulance to sort of go back to the hospital out in Camp Bastion, our regimental sort of SQMS quartermaster was there. Sorry, squadron quartermaster. And he was there. He was like, don't worry, Stodders. We'll sort out your helmet and things like that. You'll get a new helmet. Your boots are all accounted for.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's fucking the last thing on my mind.
Right. Like, where about? You know you're not going to use your boots again for a while.
I've just had my, you know, my foot half blown off, and you're making sure that my helmet's going to be accounted for. Nice.
When I stayed in country after my injury, I go to like the chow hall and everybody's there. I'm wearing like a flight suit because it was the only thing that was fat enough to fit my cast inside of it, so it wouldn't get dirt constantly. This higher level enlisted leader comes up to me and like, so I guess we're going to be fucking nasty in our uniform, right? Like, you look like shit in your uniform. And I was like, well, with all due respect, Master Guns, I got shot fucking 3 days ago. So, and he was like, well, don't I feel like a fucking dickhead? And it's amazing how like higher level leadership forget what it's like to be a young buck, like on the ground and having to do that kind of stuff. Like, what can actually happen? You can actually get injured while you're here, and you don't give a fuck about your boots.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I got back to the UK in the hospital, we're in a sort of military ward of the hospital, and there was some Air Force nurses flying about, kicking about, and I'd been in intensive care for a few days. I just got back to the ward. I hadn't shaved. I hadn't had a wash since, you know, I'd been out on the ground, and I'd been out on the ground for sort of 2-3 weeks, so right. I was covered in sand and shit, and I probably smelled horrendous. And this nurse on the ward, bear in mind, I just sort of got up there, covered in my own sick as well, where I was sick in intensive care.
Right.
And she's pestering me because I haven't shaved either.
Jesus. Like,
yeah. All right. I'll make sure that was my top priority when I got back to the UK, making sure I was clean shaven.
When they're supposed to do it for you when you're in the hospital. Unbelievable. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I got some good bed baths from the nurses.
There we go.
Yeah. There's a plus side to everything.
Yeah, man. Sam, well, how are you doing now? You recovered pretty well?
Yeah, so I still get a lot of functional pain and mobility with my ankle, but I've still got both feet, both legs, and that was sort of touch and go for a while. I got medically discharged 2015, so I had about 2.5-3 years of sort of rehab on it, making sure sort of things were good. But, yeah, so I've been out a good few years now and sort of getting along okay.
Good, man. Glad you're on the road to recovery still. It's a long one for sure, but glad to see you there. Sam, thanks so much for taking the time to join us all the way from England. We appreciate you, man. We appreciate your service and being along right beside our boys and girls out there in the desert. We appreciate it. A little segment there with that fella. I always think it's crazy to think about the terminology that they use. It's just so funny whenever they say, like, oh, he was proper fucked. Oh.
It does add a certain air of sophistication when they say certain words, and I'm always amazed by that. And I have some friends who live in London, and just the way they describe certain things. And I can remember working with some guys from Britain when I was deployed, and that was always fun just to hear the words they use.
There's a Irish dude that I follow and follow for a long time. He's a Jags fan, and I always forget because it's bizarre that somebody that's in Ireland or that's in England or in Scotland cares so much about the NFL, but he's like super invested into it, knows plays, knows all this shit. And then it always snaps me back when he smells realize, like in the British way, in the proper English way, it kind of snaps me back in. And I think that they spell realize, I think it looks cooler, although that goes against what I normally believe, because anytime that you can add a Z to anything, I feel like it's better.
Mm-hmm. That's just like a Q too.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So it does look a little different, but we'll let it slide at this point.
What we won't let slide is one of the service academies was caught up in the Naval Academy, got caught up in some drug shit. And it wasn't even like just weed and coke. Like, if you're doing weed and coke, I don't really care. They were doing like ketamine. They were doing heroin. There was some meth involved. And they were selling it and buying it by using Bitcoin. And they got everything on the dark web. It basically reads, the story reads like a show on NCIS. It sounds like a story of NCIS show that is just way too unrealistic to be real. But it was real. You had some thoughts about these folks.
Well, I would just say when you think about service academies and you think about these kids who are cooped up all the time, I think the saying goes, idle hands are the devil's workshop. You know, when you have a lot of time to yourself and you're probably a fairly intelligent person, if you told me right now go on the dark web, I wouldn't necessarily know how to get on the dark web. But I guarantee there's some intelligent people at the Naval Academy, and they had no problem getting on the dark web and finding these drugs and figuring out how to pay for them with Bitcoin. But
I'm all in on the dark web, by the way. I love the idea of the dark web.
I love the idea of it.
I wish I was on the dark web.
I want to know what's out there in the dark web.
If there was like a venison shop on the dark web where I could get deer meat for even cheaper and use Bitcoin to do it, I would borrow some of Nate's Bitcoin and buy more deer for cheaper.
Yeah. Well, I guess Navy wasn't busy winning football games this year, so they had a lot of extra time on their hands.
God, here we go. I think what's underrated about this is these dudes aren't just 18, 19 year olds. Because I think that you get a little bit of more of a pass. Like, you can get caught up with stuff. two of these dudes that did it were what's called Mustangs, where they went from being enlisted to the officer side. And I think both of them were former Marines, actually, or they're Marines. So whenever you have Marines that are doing this stuff, you are completely subject. Are you subject to the UCMJ while you're at the academy?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're very much, even if you're not prior enlisted, you're considered part of that branch of
okay,
service.
So you can get charged under the UCMJ. Say you like don't show up to class, you're like you can be charged with being
not showing up for class. That stuff falls more under the school's rules, but anything that would
No,
fall
what
under
I'm asking
UCMJ.
Is that like your appointed place of duty, like where you can
No, it's not to that extent. It's not to that extent, no. But it is more when you're talking about criminal activity, yes, then you're subject to UCMJ.
So those guys are fucked, man. Fucked.
Fucked. Plain and simple.
But I do think that there is a place in the military for guys, women, who aren't nervous about getting their hands dirty, too. I think that there's certain aspects like counterintelligence where you're able to go into the like the one of the cool stories. I don't know if I did I ever tell you the story about my friend named Troy that I was with in Iraq?
Maybe, but refresh us.
All right. So Troy was a reconnaissance Marine, and he was an enlisted guy. He then got out, went to school at the University of Texas, studied Middle Eastern studies, and at that time he went to on like different websites that were in the Middle East to find basically a terror cell to join while he was there. Got this operation approved by the Marine Corps Education Committee. I don't even know if this is classified, but I'm going to just keep going.
Just telling it.
So he got like his shit approved.
Troy's about to get a knock on the door come Friday afternoon.
So he got this shit approved, and I said his name.
Government names all over the place. Yeah, Troy
well, Troy's his first name, by the way. So Troy went to the Education Command, which is a bizarre place to get this approved. And he went to Egypt to study with Wahhabi Muslims. And Wahhabi Muslims, lest we forget, are like the most extreme kind. Like that's what Osama bin Laden was, like a lot of Al-Qaeda. Like that's where that comes from, is the Wahhabi sect of Muslim. So he actually went. He learned full Arabic, went to school there, was studying the Quran there. And he said that he was there for like 9 months going through this school. It was just outside of Cairo. So he was walking down the street one day and he saw a white woman that was wearing like a short sleeve shirt, like not even something like that was sleeveless or anything like that, short sleeve shirt. And in his mind, he goes, "What a slut," and started like calling her an infidel, like in his head. And he he said that he saw like looked over and saw the American embassy and was like, "No, wait, Troy loves slutty girls. Like this is this is what Troy loves." So he like went straight and just turned into the embassy and was like, "I can't do it anymore. Like they're about to brainwash me with how that they do this. It's so intensive," because he said that he was a part of like burning flags and like doing all this shit, like death to America, death to the West, all this shit. And he was like super involved with it. And it just ended up really morphing. Why did I start this story?
Because we were talking about the dark web.
Oh, yeah. So he found it on the dark web, I guess. Like, how to become, like, a Al-Qaeda member, for the most part. But
that's pretty crazy.
But that being said, once you dip your toe in there and your toe's already in there, you get cool with the water temperature. Even if the water temperature is really, really cold, it's 50 degrees, you see a lot of people kicking their legs on the end. Well, eventually, you get used to it and you go deeper and deeper in. The next thing you know, you're at the Naval Academy selling methamphetamines and horse tranquilizers.
And when you're on the dark web and you're talking about Bitcoin, that's obviously probably a lot harder to track. And I think about corrupt police officers, and there's a particular documentary that made me think of this. And when you think about how easy it is to get away with something, it makes it harder and harder to make that right decision. So I'm pretty sure these Naval Academy midshipmen probably knew what they were doing was wrong. But when there's no risk or little risk of getting caught and you're just pocketing tons of money and there's obviously a market for these drugs, especially with some of the party drugs that they were talking about dealing in, it's very, very hard to walk away from that. That said, at the Naval Academy, they are held to a higher standard. So they should have known better and should have not done this. And I don't want to get up on my high horse, but you know, they are held to a different standard. So it is a little disappointing to hear that our sisters there at the Naval Academy are succumbing to this investigation and to this ultimately probably pretty harsh punishment. But
oh yeah, and they are absolutely fucked too. Like,
yeah,
and it's not just going to be the group of 10 or whatever that are involved in
it. No.
It's everybody. There's going to be heart. And I was so disappointed when I read the article that was on Military Times. I read the article and they said that that they brought in the DEA to do the drug sweeps. They should have brought in the fucking Marines to do it, man. Like, I would have loved to have been the canine handler who was attached to a drug dog to fuck with all of the different cadets. That would have been, yeah, like my dream. Would be like, no there, cadet. You stand outside your room at 0430 and I'm going to go through with my drug dog.
Right, because there's a weird place that cadets and midshipmen exist in, because yes, we're on our way to being officers, but we're not in the military yet. So even the enlisted guys, they kind of not look down on us, but they kind of look at us like, all right, you're just kind of like an officer in training.
I mean, that doesn't stop anytime soon either. It's the same way with second lieutenants. You really don't get any respect as a military leader until you're at least a first lieutenant, and that's borderline. Like, you have your respect with the first lieutenant whenever they're like sergeants and below. You don't really earn the staff and CO respect until you're a captain.
I agree with that, but I'm saying I think when you're actually commissioned, they fake it a little bit better.
Oh, whereas they have when to you're fake at the it. Academy, yeah, there's definitely an element of faking it, for sure.
At the academy, they kind of – you can sense that they really don't have any respect for you a lot easier than when you're actually out in the fleet or in the Army. So
yeah, they don't, they're I can not only required imagine. To hide it yet.
Right, right, right. So that's just a really unfortunate story to come out of Navy, and they just keep taking L's. I'm sorry to see.
So the next thing that we're going to talk about is our picture that we posted on Instagram. We'll do this real quick. There's a couple points that I want to make about it. We had a picture that we saw there. There's a Brazilian woman named Marina. I can't remember her last name. But she does amazing work with these old photographs, not just from World War II time period, but from like the Spanish-American War, from the Mexican-Spanish War, from the French. Mm-hmm. I mean, just all throughout. There's a lot of stuff that she concentrates on with Native Americans. And it's beautiful. Whenever she colorizes these photos, it's beautiful. Well, I saw one that she did just scrolling through my timeline of Eagle's Nest. And you might remember Eagle's Nest from when we went through Band of Brothers series, where Dick Winters and the boys are hanging out, and they're in Austria. And so they're in mm-hmm. the Austrian mountains, and it looks beautiful. They have Hitler's champagne and scotch and wine and all of his shit, like the best stuff in the world. He has it all at his house, even though Hitler didn't drink. Didn't make a whole lot of sense, but he had it just to have it. And then the next picture is, so would you rather be in that picture in Eagle's Nest, or would you rather be one of the people who are in the picture of the raising of the flag on Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima? Cons, you immediately said that you would go to where?
I said right away, without even really thinking, Eagle's Nest, because I think you have to think beyond the picture. When you're just looking at the two pictures, Iwo Jima is by far, I think, with the exception of paintings of Washington crossing the Delaware, that's not even in the same category, but the picture of those Marines raising the flag on Iwo Jima is the most iconic photo in the history of the military, bar none. I don't think there can be any photos that can rival that in that respect. I mean, so much so that they made an entire memorial out of the photo in Washington, D.C. It's a very impressive memorial if you've never been.
And there's one basically on every single base in the Marine Corps. It's like the Marine Corps iconic like spot. Like, it's who we are.
Right, right. It stands for so much. But then when you take into the context and how brutal Iwo Jima was and how that wasn't the end of fighting at Iwo Jima, compared to the feeling the soldiers must have felt in Easy Company atop the Eagle's Nest, knowing they had just taken down Hitler, the war was coming to an end, they had their whole lives in front of them, they had made it, most importantly. When you consider the things that those guys had been through, the battles they've been through, and what they endured, the feeling they must have felt.
They went to, like, Suribachi obviously was terrible.
Yeah.
Iwo Jima was terrible, but it wasn't like Dick Winters and the boys were just coasting through. Like, they had some shit too.
They had some harsh battles along the way, and it was continuous. So to be up there feeling victorious, drinking the best liquor in the world, celebrating with your buddies, I don't think you can beat that.
Bryn?
Yeah, I'm going to Eagle's Nest because Then I can tag all my buddies in the picture, and that's getting so many more likes on the gram.
All right.
That's a great point.
I'm going Eagles Nest too. I think that if I was going based off of legacy alone, you want to be in the Iwo Jima picture. I think having your picture there is like endless legacy, like you'll be talked about forever. Eagles Nest would be just a cooler experience to be a part of because you have that, this is it, we did it. The boys on Iwo Jima never really had that because they packed up and they went straight to another battle, like right after that. It wasn't the end. Eagles Nest was the culmination of 2+ years for those people that were there, and it was done and it was over. And sipping that scotch after not really drinking anything good for 2 years and to have it, we're like, we're done. This is it. We fucking killed Hitler. Like, Hitler's dead. Yeah. We did it.
And then you post the caption, Saturdays are for the boys, and that thing is going.
That actually needs to be a Famous Friends Friday shirt.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get that made, Saturdays are for, and then that picture of the Eagle's Nest. But here's one other thing I thought about, too. How many Marines, approximately, I don't know the answer, how many Marines fought at Iwo Jima?
There was, off the top of my head now, there was 24,000 Marines that were
there. All
right,
so 24,000 Marines can all say
that. Sorry, that's casualties.
Okay, so
there's
tens of thousands.
144,000.
144,000 people, Marines, excuse me, not people, Marines, can say they fought at Iwo Jima. Only, what, 30, 40 people can say they were at the Eagle's Nest. I think that makes it a little more exclusive. Now, granted, the Iwo Jima, those five guys are immortal in that photo. But again, taking into the context, a very, very, very small percentage of people only made it up to the Eagle's Nest. So I think it makes it just a little bit cooler.
All right, here's the actual numbers. 110,000 U.S. Marines, 26,040 casualty, including 6,821 killed, 2 captured, 19,217 were wounded. I think that – but you also have numbers that are similar to that, not as far as massive amounts of numbers, but – Iwo Jima and Battle of the Bulge, like, are 1-2, like, as far as...
Yeah, they're comparable. Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, me being a Marine, if I wanted to be an icon, I would be at Iwo Jima. If I just wanted to fucking yuck it up with the boys when we're done, you go to Eagle's Nest. And right now, I am not a warfighter. Send me to the Eagle's Nest. I mean, I need to have, like, a lift to, like, bring me there in a helicopter. I don't want to go up all those stairs. That shit looked like a nightmare.
Yeah, it was... Top of a mountain, for sure. That was a little difficult of a climb.
If you got me there right now with the current state of my cardio and you're like, hey, we got to go to Eagle's Nest, I'd be like, sound the retreat, show's over.